This is a HeadGum Podcast.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to Inside Voices. I'm Kevin T. Porter. My guest today is Nick Weiger. Okay, a little background. Nick Weiger is a comedy writer who hosts Doughboys, a podcast about chain restaurants alongside his co-host Mike Mitchell. He also hosts a video game chat show called How Did This Get Played with Heather Ann Campbell. And the premise of both of these shows are Nick answering the question, what do you have a natural curiosity and passion about that you feel like you could talk about forever? And it might actually be forever with Doughboys, a show so successful it has become a sort of revenue-generating prison for both its hosts. But we'll get to that later. What I'm most struck by is Nick's capacity to host, in the true sense of that word. The running joke in his shows is that he is the unfeeling robot of whatever duo he's a part of. But it takes an extraordinary amount of care and sensitivity to dance between subjects, seed time, make space for a guest, move on to the next thing, get back to the other thing, and give his shows the conversational flow that make them so appealing to listeners. But now let's hear Nick describe what he thinks of his own voice.
I don't like my own voice. I think of myself as annoying, but I think the best description of it, because I think annoying is not what other people hear, I think the best word to describe it is monotone. I feel like I don't fluctuate my voice in terms of emotion a lot. I feel like I'm at the same level for, and I'm not doing it consciously right now. I'm not trying to do this to prove it, but I feel like I'm at the same level a lot of the time, and I've been criticized as monotone before. So yeah, monotone.
Monotone. Nick Weiger has a monotone voice. That's so, I feel like, especially on podcast stuff now too, in the way it's kind of evolved for you, it does sound more like a throwback voice. I feel like people could put you kind of in the same family of someone who's doing a 1940s announcer or sometimes even like an auctioneer or something like
right.
that. Because it does sound like those cadences have developed over time for you. Like, you are very good, sincerely, at doing the thing where you rattle everything off at the end and you usually don't make a mistake and things like that. So has that always been the case, or is that something you just got good at in the last 5 years of doing so many podcasts?
Well, thank you for saying that. Flattery will get you everywhere with me.
Hey.
I think that I have always been able to talk quickly. I've been able to like speak at a rapid cadence. So I think it's more just applying that, and I'm sure just the repetition of doing a bunch of podcasting has made me be a little bit more up the RPMs, up the MPH, however you want to say it. I've got a little speedier.
Right. Well, and it's one of those things where I don't know if you consider yourself at this point more of a performer or a writer, but it does feel like more of a performer's instinct to do that stuff. I feel like you see yourself as more of a writer, though, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't really think of myself as a performer, though I guess this is a performance. I just don't think of it in that way. I certainly don't like act professionally or anything with any frequency, and I have no idea how to act.
So I wonder what the things are that you think makes for a good host then, if it's not performance. Because if you don't believe you're good at performance, do you believe you're a good host?
I think I'm capable. I think that it's just, whatever you think of my hosting abilities, what I aim to do is I aim to, first off, try to be a good listener and try to acknowledge and absorb everything that a guest is saying or that someone I'm doing a podcast with is saying, a co-host is saying, and try to apply that and respond to that, to try to, you know, that's what I try to do first. Beyond that, we have some structure, we have some format that we have to try to hit. So I try to steer towards that when the time, when it's needed. I probably, if anything, I might have too heavy of a hand when I'm doing that, if I'm going to engage in any self-crit. But for the most part, I try to, you know, I try to engage in a conversation with somebody and listen to what they have to say, and then make sure that that's a thing I'm incorporating in whatever my response is.
Our live show's weird now because of that, because it does feel like the raw materials to make for a good live show or performance are things that, like, maybe aren't natively what makes for a good podcast episode in the studio.
Right. Well, there, it's a different thing. And I think you just are like, the mindset I have is like, okay, this is more of a performance. This is a thing where the audience is, I'm playing off of the audience as much as I'm playing off of the people that I'm on stage with and having a conversation with. The weird thing is that you'll have stretches of just silent enjoyment, or what I'm at least projecting is silent enjoyment from the audience in between, where you're just sort of like having a conversation, and then you later find out people's like, that was great, I loved it. Because it's not like you're up there doing a sketch or doing like even an improv show where you've got like, you're setting up all these laugh lines, even though hopefully there are laughs when we do our show. There are just stretches of conversation. And so, yeah, that's the thing. That's the most awkward thing to live in. But I think probably change things a little bit more to acknowledge the audience, and or at least incorporate what the audience is responding to and engaged with, and as far as what we're going to lean on in conversation.
Do you enjoy live shows at this point still?
No, I've got over live performance years ago. I stopped doing live improv. And I guess that probably, if people know me only as a podcaster, you know, I think maybe that my comfort level on stage doing live podcasting is partly from having done hundreds of improv and sketch shows in my past before I stopped doing that. But I stopped doing that in like, what, 2015 maybe? And I stopped doing it because I was like, I don't think I'm getting anything out of this. I'm not having fun doing it, so what's the point? And I stopped doing it, and then I didn't miss it. And I've talked to some other people who did a similar thing. It's like, yeah, I just don't miss it. And it was the thing that was fine for me to do when I was in my 20s and to some degree into my 30s. But it reached a point where it's just like, I feel self-conscious doing this, and I'm not having fun, and the shows are too late, and what's the point? And so, yeah, I have that same sort of feeling about doing live shows now. I mean, yeah, sometimes you'll get it, it's nice to get the acknowledgement of an audience. It's nice to get a standing O or a raucous chorus of laughter. But for the most part, yeah, I'm just like, I'm kind of over it. I've been over it for a while.
I understand that. It does function a little bit differently than like doing an improv show or something like that, where it is just literally goes into the ether and never again, who cares, in front of like maybe 90 people, that it is something that's preserved.
1,000%. And if anything, that's probably that's maybe the thing that makes you self-conscious doing it, is knowing like, oh, wait, I'm saying something stupid. And not only am I saying something stupid in front of an audience, this is going to be recorded and people are going to listen to this later and it's going to be stupid. You know, so yeah, there are moments like that are not particularly that can be a little bit of a negative for a live show. But I mean, then again, you say stupid shit in the studio all the time. You're maybe just a little less self-conscious about it. I believe this was a stretch where I wasn't working. It's possible I was on something. I was on a show that I'm forgetting about. It's you know, we started in 2015 and we talked about it earlier that we started in mid 2015. We started talking about it earlier that year, that same year. In any event, I was like, it was a time where I was not particularly busy and I didn't have a ton of work. Basically, me and Mike Mitchell, my co-host, we had discussed wanting to work together on something, just in general, because we'd been sharing a stage for a few years. We were both in sketch comedy groups that split an hour, separate sketch comedy groups. His sketch comedy group, The Birthday Boys, that later had a show on IFC. My sketch comedy group, called A Kiss from Daddy, we would do an hour of sketch every month at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in LA. And so we just knew of each other, but we had never had anything where we'd been like, hey, we're working on this thing together. And so they're like, oh, let's fucking try a podcast. Why not? People are doing that. At the time, we thought we were late to the game. Thankfully, that ends up being not the case, and the bubble appears to still be growing in podcasting. And so we were like, let's do a podcast. And then from those discussions of let's do something, let's do a podcast, then it ultimately led to what should our podcast be, and we landed on chain restaurants, which was at the time, it felt like an underexplored sector of the podcasting landscape.
Yeah, because I wonder what those other ideas were that you were talking about that may not have been worth exploring in the form of a podcast.
Well, you know, we just sort of talked about our mutual interests, and I think when we, because it was things like movies and TV, and then we were like, well, it feels like a lot of, unless you get specific, it feels like you did with Gilmore Guys, it feels like a lot of shows are covering, are there are a lot of like general movie podcasts, you know what I mean? And we're just like, well, there is, I don't think there's like a podcast that's tackling chain restaurants and fast food, at least one of any renown or popularity. So we're like, oh, well, maybe that's a novel area. And that ended up being a hook that you know, thankfully had legs for us. This was like a sketch note that I received at one point, and then that I applied and that I found useful, is like, you'll always have more success in a sketch context parodying something that you're a fan of versus something that you think is stupid. And so that was our approach to chain restaurants, was like, we're not going to say like, oh, this food fucking sucks. Who are the fucking garbage people who eat this shit? Because we are those garbage people, and we like it, you know? We are fans of that, of fast food and sit-down chains. And so we're going to honor the Cheesecake Factory. We're going to honor Taco Bell. We're going to talk about these things in the context that they are meant to be received. I think that's part of why I think we were able to, A, keep doing the show and want to keep doing the show, although that's, you know, perpetually in doubt now. And then B, why I think people responded to it, because it's not like we're not tuning into two elitists who are going to shit all over something. We're tuning into two dipshits who are going to gush over something that maybe doesn't deserve praise.
Yeah, and that feels like such an extension of, it feels like to me, a like broader cultural idea that seems to be gaining in more and more popularity, in the sense of like, low art being as valuable as high art, or even like the Jonathan Gold thing of like, the hole in the wall is as good as the 5-star restaurant,
right?
Or like Poptimism of like, yeah, the Britney Spears B-side is probably just as amazing as like the Rolling Stones masterpiece versus Rockism, that stuff. So it feels like that inherent optimism and attitude towards the idea of food and chain restaurants as like American institutions and things that deserve to be like interrogated and celebrated for all the good and bad of it feels like a part of that.
Yeah, I think, and you mentioned, you know, you used the word American, and that to me is like, yeah, you can't talk about American food without talking about chains, because that is so much that informs our culinary identity. Chain food informs local food, which in turn informs chain food. So like a lot of these, you know, cool new restaurants or local institutions either inspired a chain or drew inspiration from a chain and came up with their own take on it. More generally, I think there was like sort of a backlash to cynicism and snark, which felt like it was dominating the discourse for a while. And not that we're not ever cynical or, you know, just sort of upset about things. We have all sorts of grievances. But the thing that we're talking about, the topic of the podcast, is we're generally approaching with an open mind.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, that's what gives shows an evergreen shelf life, is that sense of positivity. And I even like the false kind of phony positivity that could be marked by so many other shows, but just the idea of open-mindedness and maybe I'm wrong, or that kind of spirit of optimism when approaching things. I find that to be the case with so many things now. I feel like, yeah, like the idea of being fluent in sarcasm, or that like starting with the premise or the thesis statement, like, we all know this is stupid, right? It just ages so poorly, so quickly now, in a way that I feel like the stuff where it's like, okay, well, like, let's maybe give it a shot and see what this is about. Or like, maybe this is actually great and it's strange that it's great, but we want to communicate that in some way. So I feel like that is like such an ingredient in terms of like the longevity or the appeal of the show.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I mean, I think also when you do encounter something that sucks, and if you have a tendency or reputation to approach things with an open mind, then you've like earned it when you say this is dog shit, because it feels like people know you're not coming from a place to you know, denigrate something. You're coming from a place to honestly evaluate something.
Yeah, and it is such a funny. It's such a funny premise for the show too, just because of the universality of it. People's individual experiences with like this kind of drive-through, or having opinions about this, or like French fry versus that one, or this sort of grill, like that is tapping into so like a myriad of things. So much of which does feel like nostalgia in some ways.
Yes.
Nostalgia just feels like one of the core ingredients. And again, not in like a cheap way of like, remember Back to the Future, here's a DeLorean, but just in the sense of like, it's intrinsic. And even as these things and these businesses continue to be parts of society in some ways, like it's intrinsic to like our memory and like who we were growing up and what we were shaped into being. If that doesn't sound too lofty, but I just feel like food is so loaded into like identity and class and race, even a lot of times, like it just feels like it touches everything.
Yeah. And when we approach guests on that note about, you know, what do you want to cover? What chains would you want to review? Or when we suggest chains to review to a guest, because each episode, if you're not familiar with the podcast, we have a different chain restaurant, and then our guest has either, it could be someone who's completely new to it, or it could be someone who has some memories associated with it, but usually it's someone who has some connection to it, like hey, this was the place where I always got to go if I got an A on my report card growing up, or this is the place that I went to once and I had such bad food poisoning that I threw up in the bathroom and then also threw up in the car. Or I believe in your case with Cold Stone Creamery, you were an employee of Cold Stone.
Yeah, for a single day, I was an employee of Cold Stone.
Yeah.
I think that was the,
that's
that,
right.
That was the story. Yeah, because I had friends who worked there, and then I hung out there so much, they like had someone down on the shift, and then I just took over, violating a lot of health codes at the time, I believe. What a fun time for all of us.
Yeah, so I think if you grew up in the U.S., you have a lot of, you know, you have memories associated with the chain restaurants for better or worse, you know?
It almost gets into weird things of like the way we form identity and personality in the context of taste, where it's,
yes,
like, I am the kind of person who prefers Wendy's over Chick-fil-A, or I am the kind of person that like hates Chili's, but Applebee's I could blah, blah, blah. Like, it feels like it gets into all of that stuff too.
Yeah, and we began the show by talking about, you know, earlier in the show we were talking about live shows, and when we do a live show, we usually go to a city and then we review a local regional chain that we couldn't normally have where we record in LA, and we find with that is that people have fierce allegiances to the chain that is connected to where they live, you know, and so or. Contra that, there are people who are skeptics of like, who are just like, this place is bullshit, this is just where tourists go, I want you to come here and come to our town and rip our beloved local chain to shreds. Like, people have very strong opinions based on what the local chain is. You know, Texas and Whataburger was a big one, Chicago and Portillo's. People just, my podcast partner Mitch, is his favorite pizza parlor. We went there in Boston, and people were like, you know, people, Pizzeria Regina, and people felt very strongly about that one way or the other. So that will be another aspect, and I think that's another way that these chains affect people's lives.
The thing that shines through with all that stuff, and even like the curiosity of theming it to specific places in everyone's towns, is that like intrinsic curiosity and open nature of the podcast, which again, like, cloaked in like conflict, both played up and real, and some, like, you know, some nasty things said and stuff, but like the core of that is still this sense of like truly what it's like to host a person too, and even as a podcast host, like what it's like to welcome someone in and like want to understand their point of view or their perspective or why they like the things that they like.
Hopefully it's, this is a place where Mitch and I are at odds, is that just We just have different takes on whether it's okay to disagree on something. You know what I mean? There's I think a part of Mitch that I feel like gets very, very rigid about, like, there's right or wrong, there's good or bad. You can have the wrong opinion. And this is making me sound good, but whatever. I think I'm the good guy. I try to be more of like, oh, it's someone's not going to like something, or maybe you like something more. I think that's okay. And I think that those two different personality types are naturally going to be at odds. Mitch is a good man, and he is very, very talented. We have our difficulties working with each other. I do feel like when people, you know, I'll just say, like, I don't feel like our differences are played up on the show all that much. I think it's just like we legitimately have things we disagree about in terms of what we should do, what we should be doing, and how we should be doing it. And that goes down to that that affects a lot of decisions that are made about an individual episode and about the show in general. And so, yeah, when we have some sort of conflict, that's usually at least based in reality. So, yeah, I think we have difficulty working with each other. We'll each say that the other is the source of the problem. And who's to say what the truth is?
Yeah, it's probably somewhere in the middle, maybe. Or maybe it's you, because I'm talking to you right now, and it's actually you're the one on the right. With that stuff, I do remember years and years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember years and years ago texting you and saying, like, hey, sometimes the way you and Mitch do conflict on the show feels very healthy and positive for me to listen to. As someone like who's like, when working with people closely in a certain kind of context, can feel like when you don't have like that exorcism of those things, that when it feels like tamped down in some way, not even necessarily with podcast stuff, but just like in any like work situation or professional situation, that it can, there's something so like thrilling in a way, and yeah, cathartic in the literal sense, about hearing two people who, you know, like, and it is comedic and there are mics, but just like playing out their circumstances for real in some way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I guess that is maybe what some people respond to. I think it's probably a thing we stumbled into. We weren't consciously, when we set out, like, hey, we're going to do the podcast about chain restaurants, we wouldn't be like, okay, this is going to be about, you know, how working together strains a friendship. But that ended up being like kind of the, you know, a running subplot in the show.
Well, and I think it's probably, again, another like facet of appeal of the show is the sense of authenticity to it too, that I don't think at any point that listeners would categorize or describe the show as being kind of phony or putting on airs, or yeah, they're like a little too lovey-dovey, right, Nick? That's right, Mitch. Like, it feels very genuine in that way. That I think is like invitational for people to feel a part of it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I think that also feeds into, we get a lot of people who very strongly identify with one or the two of us, because we are very different personality types, and we are also always fighting. And so there were people who get defensive, who think like Mitch is too mean to me, or I'm too mean to Mitch, or, you know, that one of us sucks and the other one is carrying the other. You know, it's like we get a lot of that sort of stuff. And I think fundamentally, maybe, I think most listeners understand what our working relationship is, and how that, I think most people get a sense of it, but I think there are some people who maybe think that like Mitch and I at some level like hate each other, and think that we are like, I'm like, fuck that guy, and he's like, fuck that guy, and we genuinely disdain each other. But that's not the case. We like each other. We just have a lot of things we disagree about. And sometimes we don't like each other.
Yeah, no, fully. No, I mean, that stuff is always such a Rorschach test for how people grew up, right? In terms of like how they saw conflict dealt with or not dealt with in their own like formative years, either with parents or authority figures or something. And sometimes that stuff can feel like toxic and poisonous and don't ever touch it. And sometimes it's like, yeah, that's what you have to do, because you have to be with this person for the rest of however long, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think we're also very aware that this is a, you know, we are making money off of the show, which, and so it's become a source of income for us. And you know, if anything, we're like, okay, well, now we're further entrenched into working together because there's some sort of we're getting financial benefit out of it. So I think there is part of it being like trapped together in something and kind of like having to make it work under the circumstances. And I feel like that is maybe something that some people, I don't know, identify with or what have you.
Let's take a break from Nick's monotone voice, and we'll be right back with more Inside Voices.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Inside Voices. And now, the rest of my conversation with Nick.
I feel like you guys have been pretty candid and transparent and pretty responsible in terms of like stewarding the audience that you've been able to grow and keep, in the sense of paying performers and trying to do things fair from like a wage perspective and paying everyone well that works for you. With money stuff, given that it is a monetization of things that are true and authentic, and it is different, especially for you, for like the difference between writing a comedy sketch for a TV show that then is like has advertisers, so you get paid WGA Guild or whatever that is, like whatever right. the minimums are. This is like a monetization of authentic things and true things in your life. So it is a true relationship between you and Mitch. It's a true conversation that you're having. Does that feel uncomfortable ever? Or like it's a high wire act when it is things that like the thing that brings money into your life and does function as sort of a job is also just truly your life in some part?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, we do a show and we have a format and we have segments. So there is some content that's being created. But you're right. It is a lot of us just putting ourselves out there, and people know a lot about a lot of personal details about me and Mitch that they wouldn't if we didn't have a podcast. And we're not doing characters. We are ourselves, and we are, you know, very, I think, as much as you can be on a show, authentically ourselves. So yeah, it's fucking weird. It's weird to think about. It's weird that there are people who listen to the show and then follow my wife on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like, that's like a weird, like that, those things, there are aspects of it that, or that like know when my birthday is, you know, whatever, those are minor things, but there is a part of it that feels invasive. And there's also a part of it where I'm just like, well, like, I guess that I did this to myself. I volunteered to make all this private information public as a source of entertainment. But there are times when I'm just like, maybe I wish that I could have that back, or maybe it's fucking, I don't know. It's kind of weird to just be making money off of your life in some way.
Does it feel like it's worth it at this point?
I think so, because I think we still overall have fun doing the show. And to be honest, it's not that much work. There's prep involved for an episode, but it's not like I'm working full time trying to prep every week's Doughboys. You know, there's less work involved in doing the podcast than doing any writing job I've ever had, or any square job I've ever had, to be honest. So yeah, from that standpoint, I think it's worth it. And also, I think what we've seen in the entertainment industry in which we work is the same thing you've seen with labor in general, which is just the worker being further subjugated and crushed under the boot heel of management and having less power, less mobility, less money. And so it, like, instead of having to be like, well, I hope I can string together a 13-week writing job, which is the minimum length of a WGA contract, Writers Guild contract, for the minimum amount of money that they legally can pay me by the union deal. I am hoping I can get one of those and then stretch that money for an entire year. It's nice to have the stability of like, okay, you know what? I have my own show that we make on our own and that we control. And as long as, you know, fucking the bottom doesn't fall out of Patreon or something, we can keep this going. And this is a stable way for us to, you know, to finance our own lives.
I do wonder, because with comedy writing, it was something that you cared about enough, and comedy was something you cared about enough to kind of switch careers when you did. You were working in video game development and you were a game designer. Yes. At some point, and then you left that behind to do this. I'm kind of wondering the space that comedy writing occupies for you now. And obviously, like every dream anyone's ever had, you know, they get a certain amount into it and there's like a little less shine on it. But even in relation right. to like what the podcast does and what your podcasts do and the way those function in your life and the kind of like autonomy and control that you can have versus the kind of scenario you were just describing, if it does make that a little less attractive or just more attractive in a different context, I don't know.
I mean, there's a part of me that wishes like, oh, I wish I could just kind of end the podcast and then just make enough money consistently off of writing jobs where I don't ever do the podcast, because that speaks to what you're talking about exposing your personal life so much and monetizing your real life and how weird that feels. Because I am, I would say, a private person, even a recluse. And so it is a little at odds with how I like to live. So there's parts of that, but I feel the main benefit, the positive, the thing that I've liked is that I can care about writing jobs even less. Like, I'm just like, I don't have to care that much about whether I get something or not, because it's not going to whether or not I can, you know, afford my living expenses for the next few months is not contingent on whether or not I get this job. Also, when I get a job, and if I'm sitting in a job, I can be a little bit more, you know, like, hey, if I think something, I don't agree with how something is being done, I can speak up, and I'm not going to worry as much about reprisal or something like that, because I do have this sort of fallback plan. Or you know, I can just like put a little bit less of my personal self-worth into whether something I write gets on the air or not, because, hey, this is just another job for me. I got something else going on where I feel like I know I'm valued, if that makes any sense.
That totally makes sense, because it is an interesting thing of like beforehand and pre-podcasting, in terms of like at least professional, not personal, but professional validation, that it was kind of predicated on those people saying yes to you and being in certain right. rooms and then and whatever happens in those rooms. And now for you, at least professionally, there is sort of a overwhelming validation in the sense of like, well, this many people have enjoyed what I've done and think there's something to it for this many years and consistently. And every week people listen to me, not because they literally have nothing better to do, but because they like what I'm doing. So I would imagine that'd be very emboldening in those situations.
It also, this is making me think of that it also, like, you see on social media what people are actually responding to. And like, I've written for TV shows for years and never had like people just be like, hey man, just watch this episode of blank, great job, you know, because it's just not how people consume content anymore. And like, if you want that, you have to be like, hey, I wrote tonight's episode of blank, check it out. And then you'll get a bunch of congratulatory replies from people who mostly didn't watch it, but the mostly industry colleagues who are hoping you keep them in mind. And then but like the podcast is just like, well, I get consistent feedback. I know people are listening to it. I can look at the numbers and I can see the engagement. And so it's weird to have this fucking podcast that feels like it's a bigger platform than a fucking TV show. But I guess that's just maybe part of it because it's yours, part of it because it's mine, rather. You know, like it belongs to us, as opposed to I'm a part of this bigger whole. And then But also because I think it's just easier for people to directly engage with a podcast versus like a TV show or something.
It's surprising though to hear that it still would be something where it's like you would drop it and continue to do TV writing full time if you could, given the kind of like the personal trade off.
There are times I think about that, but then there are other times where I'm just like it's so tenuous, and it feels like, hey, fuck it, maybe I'll age out of podcasting at some point. I don't know, but there is a very ageist streak of Hollywood that you know that you reach a certain age, you reach a certain number of years, and it's harder to get jobs unless you're the boss. And so I perpetually worry about that. It's like, how am I going to get work in my 50s? And I think that there's a lot of people whose plan is just like, I'm going to make as much money as I can in my 40s and then just be able to ride it out, which to me seems, you know, whatever. I know some people that strike gold and then their 20s, 30s, and 40s accumulate so many credits that they're just making bank off of residuals and have stockpiled so much cash from working on big budget, big name shows, but that's not me, and that hasn't been my career path. So it's. I think I'm also like have an eye towards the future, and I'm like, I don't know if that's sustainable for me, unless I'm gonna fucking create Game of Thrones, and I don't feel like I'm gonna create Game of Thrones, you know?
Can I play a clip from? This is 5 years ago to the month, actually. This is your first Doughboys episode ever.
Wow!
From May the 20th, 2015. With Eva Anderson. This is the opening of the show, and this is a clip of you.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Welcome to Doughboys. Yeah. My name is Nick Weiger, alongside my co-host, Mike Mitchell. Mitch, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. That was like a beautiful poetry, what you just said.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we want to add a little bit of gravitas to what we're doing. This is a podcast. This is our inaugural episode, and this is our podcast about chain restaurants, which is a passion of both Mitch and myself. Mm-hmm. Each episode we'll be tackling a different chain restaurant. And this episode, for our first one, we're talking about Chili's, which I think is one of the main ones. Main is the right word to use?
I think I would like to say it's kind of a well-respected chain restaurant. If I kind of had to sum it up, like I feel like. A lot of people like Chili's. When I told people I was going to Chili's, everyone's like, "Oh, Chili's is great." You know, it was kind of the response I got from it. So I think that this one is it's a good one to start off on. I think it's if you asked people, you know, if this was Family Feud, and you said chain restaurants, I think Chili's might be one of the first ones out of people's mouth. I think it would be the number one spot.
I think maybe number two or three, but it would be up there.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah. I'm not trying to undercut you. I think it could be the number one answer.
No, you're right. It would be two or three.
It might also be two or three. Anywhere from one to three, I think, is where Chili's could fall in the Family Feud.
Nick is a writer for the Family Feud in his spare time.
So that was 5 years ago. What do you hear when you hear that clip now?
So I listened to this episode not fairly recently, within the past a year or so, because we did our 250th episode and we had Eva Anderson, our first ever guest, return, and we reviewed Chili's 2. So I wanted to, which is the airport version of Chili's. And so I listened to the Chili's episode, and yeah, those early episodes are strange. I feel like we were trying to do NPR a little bit. Like we're like a little bit more here, a little bit more soft spoken. Yeah. I feel like we were just trying to imitate that cadence. And then we also, the thing that I picked up there that I didn't notice last time is you hear our first ever on-air disagreement happen very early. And it's very, it's very congenial. Like it's well handled, and but ultimately that ended up being the main thing of the show, is that we were always having minor disagreements and bickering over them, or major disagreements and bickering over them endlessly.
Pardon me, sir. I did not mean to undercut you, sir. Perchance, yeah. I let you finish the sentence. No, well, go ahead, Doc. That's what it feels like. But yeah, no, your cadence is so different from what it becomes. But also there's this funny thing I've noticed in comedy podcasting too, that over years, even like guys like Aukerman, when they start, it is kind of more down here and like, hey, welcome to Doughboys, welcome to Comedy Bang Bang, and then it becomes more high energy over time, and you have the confidence that you're not yelling, and there is like a more of an oratory to it.
Yeah, I think that's you know, I realize that like energy helps it And that's like, you know, that's the better, that kind of sets the table for where the show is going to end up going over the course of an episode. But I think the NPR instinct, the kind of quiet, like reserved energy that you just mentioned, I think that comes from your like a lot of people in comedy, especially from alt comedy, indie comedy, are afraid of sounding like shock jocks because you think of shock jocks as hacky. So you're like, well, I can't be that guy. I don't want to be a morning radio guy. So I got to, you know, so I got to be like a little bit more of a right here guy. I've got to be a little bit more of like a calming guy. But that ends up sounding its own kind of, you know, annoying, its own kind of obnoxious. So you land somewhere in the middle.
Right. And it's funny to think about people, you know, little boys and girls right now listening to Doughboys for whom Weiger and Mitch will be sort of touchstones in terms of starting their own podcasts of how they vocalize and verbalize their thoughts.
God, that's so grim. We've met some like, you know, like teenagers, no children, but we've had like teenagers on the road who have like their parents have taken them to the show or whatever. And it's very, it's weird. I can't imagine being someone in high school and listening to two men in their late 30s argue over Sparrow. But there are some kids who are like, that is my exact, that this completely connects for me. This is like what I think is interesting and funny, and this reminds me of how I talk to my friends or whatever. It's like, oh, fucking whatever, I don't know, I don't get it. But yeah, they're, you're right, I guess there's some people growing up with it.
Isn't that I feel like that's more of a testament to like past a certain age, we just like will not know how media functions for children. Do you know what
100%,
I mean?
100%, yeah.
Where I guess, yeah, like Fortnite is actually the most popular thing in the world rather than like whatever movie came out this weekend or Star Wars or something. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like in the niche casting of that, that fully makes sense to me that children would love Doughboys because there's some dumb kid in Michigan that has the exact same feelings about McDonald's as you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I do think, and I think that's also speaking from going back to TV and working in TV, one thing I realized over and over again, lesson I learned over and over again, is just how out of touch people who work in TV and who are decision makers are with what is actually relevant and popular. Not that I'm Mr. In Touch with that shit, but I think I'm like at least aware enough to be like, okay, this thing like Fortnite that you just mentioned, like Fortnite is huge. That is a big thing. That is not a thing that just can kind of be hand-waved away. But I think a lot of people are, I think there's maybe a lot of people who work in the entertainment industry who like live in that world and are convinced that like the latest multicam sitcom on CBS is actually relevant, is actually what people are watching and listening to and talking about, as opposed to something that's just, you know, entertainment for boomers.
Right, which is why the whole conversation in the sense of like where what your purpose and priority is or what you care about more as far as like television writing versus the podcast stuff does become so interesting, especially too now in this sort of like wave we've seen of celebrity podcasters and actors from old TV shows starting recap podcasts of their own show and things like that. Mm-hmm. It does feel more like a testament to the monoculture of the industry crumbling as a whole.
Right. And also, I think that is a lot of that is coming from agencies, and agencies are trying to package their clients, you know, like William Morris Endeavor has a WME has a podcasting slate, and they're trying to be like, we have a client, we have this actor who's, you know, we have this celebrity client, and we're going to have them do a podcast. So because it's another way, another platform for them. And then also that both, you know, could be a revenue source, but also it just further entrenches them as a client of our agency because they have a podcast through our agency. So that's part of it. That's part of where these celebrity vanity projects are coming from, podcasts are coming from. Part of it is just like, you know, networks see it's a cheap way to jump to the top of the charts, at least in the short term. I'm skeptical about the staying power of a lot of these shows because I think one thing I've noticed is a lot of celebrities get too busy to output episodes consistently. And that's the main thing that you need as a podcaster is just consistency of output. You either need discrete seasons that people can count on coming out, or just like episodes are coming out every week or twice a week. They are coming out in a reliable schedule that people can listen to during their commutes or during their shifts or during their chores. And the other thing is I just feel like a lot of celebrity, like hosting slash podcasting is its own skill, and you can be a great actor on a sitcom, but maybe you don't, or you aren't particularly adept at that format. And I think we're going to run into that a lot. On this topic, I saw a similar thing happen with web videos and sketch when I worked at Funny or Die, which is just they went fully in the direction of let's get a celebrity to be in this thing, and then that will make sure that it goes viral. And it's like a shortcut that works in the short term, but eventually you go to that trick so many times, you only go to that well so many times before people get numb to it and it stops being a novelty. And so I worry about that being the primary, the focus or the strategy of a podcast network is like, we're going to get celebrity talent to do podcasts. I feel like the best way is still just get podcasters to create interesting content, to create new shows. But, you know, whatever, I'm sure that's partly self-interest at play too.
Yeah, because there is such an existential threat to people right. who are not Jenna Fisher right now. That said, Nick and I are very much looking forward to Matt and Matt Are Friends, the Matthew Perry, Matt LeBlanc hosted Friends recap podcast. I'm sure will come out sometime in the next 2 to 3 years.
I'd listen to that.
See?
I think that would actually work.
I think it would, which sucks.
I think it's a good idea. No, that's a good idea.
So you've done Doughboys, which is taking something that you did care a lot about, food, and then forcing yourself to eat a lot of it and talk about it at least once a week, usually twice. Now, you've done a sort of similar thing with video games on How Did This Get Played? In yes. which you've taken a thing that you natively have an interest, passion, and curiosity for, and forced yourself to confront the worst aspects of it.
Welcome to How Did This Get Played, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest video games of all time. I'm Nick Weiger alongside Heather Ann Campbell. Heather, why are we doing this to ourselves?
You know, halfway through my playing of Sonic for this podcast, I was like, this is going to ruin games for me. And I was already a video game journalist.
Right.
That should have ruined video games for me.
So Sonic 06 was released for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. It's interesting. We started that premise and we were obviously an homage slash spinoff, semi-authorized spinoff to How Did This Get Made, the wonderful movie podcast on Earwolf. And we kind of started of just like, we're going to play shitty video games. And we kind of found as we were doing it that the episodes that people responded to were ones where we were more doing like weird or unusual video games that oftentimes we liked or enjoyed. And I think we've maybe found through doing it that we've gotten maybe a little bit a distance from the initial premise to be like, okay, this is maybe less about like famously bad video games, although that's the thing we cover, as more about like notable video games and ones that maybe had some lasting effect on the industry or just so anomalous that they are remembered and they aren't ones that are necessarily completely broken and unplayable.
I'm a little less familiar with the origin story for this show. Was it the same sort of germ where you and Heather were looking to work on something together?
Yeah, we talked about just doing a show together because we thought it would be fun. I had known Heather a long time. She's one of the first entertainment industry people I met in L.A., way, way back in the day. God, maybe like 2005, I want to say, maybe longer ago than that. But anyway, she is, we've worked together a lot. We like each other and we thought it'd be fun to do a podcast together. We did a pilot on our own. We did a one about her. It was basically the same premise as Newcomers, which is the Lauren Lapkus, Nicole Byer podcast. On HeadGum, where they're watching Star Wars for the first time. It was a similar sort of thing, except I'm someone who's super familiar with Star Wars. Heather is someone who just got into Star Wars with The Last Jedi. I had never really been a fan of it before. So we did it. We were doing that Star Wars thing, and then we were just sort of like, I don't know if this is the right thing for us. We talked some more about doing something. We eventually landed on some sort of video game format, and then from there, dialed in the specific premise.
I feel like, too, listening to you in these two different contexts on Doughboys and on How Did This Get Played, it does really shed light and give shine to the kind of skill and nimbleness that's required in these hosting situations. Because for the most part, And not to discredit the talent of your co-host, because it's not a talent situation, but generally there's just someone who's kind of more in the driver's seat in terms of like, it's time for this, it's time for this. Now we segue to this. And it's something that's so prevalent and so obvious, like how good you are at that stuff. And even just like when to exit a bit, how to get to the next thing, how to transition from someone's thing, how to give attention to this and chase this down. I feel like A-B comparison both of those shows really sheds light on that.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. You know, I don't know if I have any particular skill at it, but I try to be, again, try to be conscious of where we are on the show and what it needs and steer it towards that, sometimes very ham-fistedly. But, you know, sometimes that needs to be done, I guess.
But there's to a degree, this has got to be a Malcolm Gladwell, a famously smart man who's never wrong, but it's got to be a 10,000 hours thing, right? In the sense of like, well, you've probably done with the Doughboys double, like 400 something episodes of Doughboys, and you'll do however many hundred episodes of How Did This Get Played. So it's like, this is comfortable and something you're good at this point. Like, you have to be. It's just literally something you have to be to exist in this space.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, or I don't know. I could just also be this, the people are just familiar with it and are just sort of like living in this rut with me. So I don't know.
Well, yeah, I would imagine positive feedback at any turn with this stuff is very difficult to internalize. Even the stuff that is like very heartfelt and sincere from like audience members and stuff. I think it's hard for any of us to believe like, oh, no, okay, I know how to do this. Rather than like, I just want to survive and get this done, this thing that's in front of me.
Right. Well, yeah, because it does always feel like a little, I always feel a little frantic. I don't feel like I'm ever fully relaxed. I'm always just like, okay, you know, if I've got like a stopwatch going or something like that, I'm like, okay, this is where we are in the episode. We need to get here. Okay, this tangent is going on a little bit too long. We're going to have to figure out how to get from there to there. Oh, I was about to transition to something, but I got interrupted. Okay, we'll follow this for a little bit. You know, it is like, I do feel a little bit, I do always feel like a little bit like I'm flailing while it's going on.
Yeah, and that may be the case, and I fully grant that. I think it's something that doesn't generally shine through, though. And I think that's like the talent, right? Because I think most good hosts are actually like that. I think most good hosts are not like, yeah, it's just kind of whatever, who cares? I think most people who want to be good at something like that, that is kind of the internal process with that stuff.
You know why it doesn't shine through? Because I talk in a monotone.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, all right, Nick. I like your voice. I think you're a good host, whether you want to internalize
it
or not.
You know, I think you're a good host.
Thanks, buddy. The thing that I was very struck by recently was in one of the recent How Did This Get Played episodes where you guys listened to that voicemail from the nice man who worked as a custodian at a local school.
Hello, this is Brian from Omaha, Nebraska. And I wanted to tell you guys are awesome. Heard your latest podcast of How Did This Get Played, and I heard you guys felt pretty bad for yourselves of like what you're doing. And I want to say, hey, I'm a custodian at a school, late night custodian, and I clean stuff. And I have to say, without you guys, my job would be much worse. So I'm really happy. What you guys do is awesome. So don't stop doing what you're doing. It's awesome. So if you guys stop, I'm going to have a bad time at my job, because then everything is much worse. I mean, it's already worse, but it would be much worse. So I don't want that to happen. But the point I'm getting is, you guys are awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. Have a nice day.
I got a little secondhand choked up listening to it, and kind of, and I know Heather actually did cry on the air,
yeah,
listening to it, but that stuff, I hope that's, I know it's hard for it to like fully sink in or to internalize in a positive way or be meaningful, but I hope it does in some respect.
It's nice when people say nice things about you, and you know, even a stone man like me can be affected by it. So I think the, and also, I think that is the, I never felt like I've added any value to society, except when you hear for someone who's like in the working class, who's doing an essential job, like being a school janitor, who is like, hey, this helps me get through my shift. I'm like, okay, that feels like this is, or I had this, you know, I was in I had this health condition and I would, this listening to your show helped me get through it. I was like, okay, or this, you know, this trauma in my life. Those are the moments where you're like, okay, well, maybe there's something positive to come out of this.
Yeah, I think definitely so. And I think it's one of those things that forces you to receive that, because not receiving it would invalidate the sincerity of the person giving it to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it's still weird. The whole thing's weird. Everything's weird.
The whole thing's weird. But that being said, Nick Weiger, I really like your voice. And right now, I'm standing up and I'm going to my balcony. It's 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I'm clapping for the essential work that Nick Weiger is doing on all his shows, on How Did This Get Played, on Doughboys, on guest appearances, on such shows as Inside Voices. Thank you for being on the front lines of people's ears.
It's funny, I opened up my window and mostly I heard booing. So
that sounds right. That sounds right to me.
Nick Weiger has a monotone voice, and you can hear that voice on Doughboys or How Did This Get Played, wherever you find your podcasts. Once again, I don't know where you get your podcasts, and you shouldn't feel obligated to tell me. We'll still be friends either way. Inside Voices is produced by me and Steve Allman. Our theme music is by Pam Autori. I'm your host, Kevin T. Porter. Thanks for spending time with us today on Inside Voices. And please, at least for now, stay inside.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.